as Shivas Batamas ebbs away and the 3 weeks just begin, we might be wondering, we've been fasting, but what are we supposed to be doing? Where are we supposed to be going? What are we supposed to be thinking about? How are we supposed to grow from this time? And I want to start this exploration, this journey, with a truly bizarre story. Probably one of the most bizarre stories that is told about the Amoraim in the Talmud Bavli. Some people like text, some people don't like text. If you like text, you have it in front of you. It's a Gemara in Perek HaKones, Bava Kama Daf Nun Tes. It's source number one. Gemara HaKones in front of you. The Gemara tells the story of Eliezer Ze'ira. Eliezer the Small. If he lived nowadays, we would call him Eliezer Klein. Eliezer Ze'ira is a holy Amora. Seems like he was a very early Amora from the first generation of Amoraim. He lives in Bavel. He's walking around in the streets of Naharda, one of the major Jewish communities in Bavel at the time. Shmuel was a Rav. Eliezer Ze'ira is walking around, minding his own business. Eliezer Ze'ira have a Sayyid Masani Uchmi, the Koi Beshukut Naharda. He's walking around the streets of Naharda in the marketplace, wearing black shoes. Doesn't strike us as remarkable. Rashi tells us, the top of the days, that at the time, black shoes were unusual. Black shoes, at least among Jews, were a sign of Avelos. Now, at the time, Bavel was a part of the Persian Empire. Persian Empire was very tolerant of many minorities. Persian Empire gave, and that's part of why Kadosh Baruch Hu thought of it, that Klal Yisrael would set down deep roots there. The Talmud Bavli could be written there. The Gaonim could operate there. The longest yeshiva in Jewish history could exist in Bavel because of the talents that they had. So much so that the Persian Empire even allowed the Jews to govern themselves to an extent. They were a semi-autonomous unit led by the political leader of the Jews known as the Reish Galusa. Ashkechu Devei Reish Galusa. The Gemara tells us that Eliezer Ze'ira is walking down the street in Harda and he's stopped by the Reish Galusa's police, the Jewish police in Bavel. And they say, Maishno Hanim Misani. We're so sorry to hear. Did you lose someone? Why are you wearing the black shoes? So he says, no, Armelahu dekal ma'avil na Yerushalayim. It's not what the Ramban refers to as an avelos chadasha. It's not a fresh avelos of a personal loss. It's avelos yishana. It's the ancient loss. I'm mourning the ancient loss of Yerushalayim. This is several centuries after the Churban Bayis Sheni. And they say to him, up to this point, the story seems like it's flowing pretty smoothly. And now suddenly it takes the first of several strange turns. Amrulay, at chashivas esabu Yerushalayim? The police say to Eliezer Ze'ira, well, you think you're chashiv enough? You're a person of enough spiritual distinction and level that you could mourn for Yerushalayim? Words that sound strange to our ears when we read them, particularly on Shavuos or Tammuz, and we're all engaged in mourning for Yerushalayim. We're beginning a period of 3 weeks of increased mourning for Yerushalayim. Every Jew of every level is called upon to mourn for Yerushalayim. But the Jewish police say, Eliezer Ze'ira, who do you think you are? You think you're such a tzaddik that you're worthy to mourn for Yerushalayim? Savor, you are a Rahava. And they felt that he's arrogant. You're showing off that you're such a big tzaddik. You're not such a big tzaddik. You don't deserve, you're not a person of such level. And then it gets stranger. Asiyuv v'chavshuah, they arrested him. The Jewish police arrested Eliezer Ze'ira for the crime of arrogance, for the crime of gaiva. You're egotistical, you're bragging, trying to show off someone that you're not. He's thrown in jail. A remarkable type of midos police. Amar lahu gavar rabana. Now, how would you respond to the charge of gaiva? This is yet another strange turn. He says, no, you understand. I'm a big tzaddik. I'm a big talmud chacham. It doesn't sound like the solution to the problem of gaiva. It sounds like he's, digging his own grave even deeper. And so they say to him, oh, really? Well, how are we to know? How do we know? So he says, well, you can ask me some shayos, I can ask you some shayos. Let's talk and learning. And they begin to talk and learn, and then the Gemara says, it becomes clear very quickly that he's an extraordinary talmud chacham. And the Gemara ends, shavkuhu. They realize that he's an extraordinary talmud chacham, so now we'll let you go. So he's released from jail. A truly bizarre story on so many levels. Now, the question of why do you respond to the charge of gaiva by saying, I'm a great Talmud Chacham, apparently that was the issue. apparently, if you're a great enough Talmud Chacham, which in the end he turns out to be, so then you're worthy, it's appropriate for a person of his level to be mourning publicly for Yerushalayim. So they didn't consider it to be gaiva any longer, that was appropriate, and so that's why they release him. And it's certainly heartwarming to know that there was a time in Jewish history when the Jewish political apparatus understood that midos tovos are not icing on the cake, that midos tovos are required of every Jew, that every Jew is required to be humble, so much so that it was a punishable, imprisonable criminal offense. Remarkable. But at the heart of the story is the assumption that not everyone, that you need to be chashev to misa'avu Yerushalayim. And that's truly bizarre. Rishus Harav? That's truly bizarre. Don't we all? Did we say only Rav Shechter, he should fast Shavas B'Tamas? The rest of us, we're not chashev enough. So we'll all go eat breakfast, lunch, and supper. And the Rosh Yeshiva, they'll fast Shavas B'Tamas. We didn't say that. We said if you're healthy enough, everyone has to fast. So how does, and that's based on Mishnayos and Tainus. How those Mishnayos square with this Agarata in Perek HaKonos? So Chaim Friedlander has an incredible insight in his Sefer Sifsa Chaim, the third volume of the essays about Tisha B'Av, where he suggests that this story must have happened at a different time of the year. And he says, and if you're living in Beit Meir, it's easier to appreciate this. You're on the phone with someone. You're not sure how the conversation is going, and suddenly there's a click, and he's gone. So what just happened? Did he hang up on you? Is he no longer talking to you? Or did you just bad reception? You lost connection. Right? You're in the car. You're tuned to your favorite radio station, and there's silence. The other radio stations are working. Cars where the radio is working, but the station you want, silence. What does that mean? Are they not broadcasting? They shut down? Or are you just in a bad spot? So if you're in an area with poor reception, you drive further and further away from the city where that the tower for that station is located, eventually you're going to lose reception. But if you're in town and you tune to the station, you hear silence, that means they stopped broadcasting. So, if you're on the phone with someone in Beit Meir, and suddenly he clicks out, okay, so maybe just bad reception. He's trying to talk to me, just, the call got dropped. But if he's in a place with great reception, and suddenly there's a click, that means that he stopped talking to you. All year long, you have to be a gavur rabba. You have to be a person of extraordinary measure, apparently, to be misabel in Yerushalayim, because you have to be a person of unusual reception capacity to be tuned into HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much on a random Tuesday in the middle of the month of Iyar to notice that the station isn't broadcasting, to notice that there's something missing in what I could be getting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Most of us are not tuned enough to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to notice what we're missing by not having a Beis HaMikdash. Our lives are spiritually impoverished. Our lives are rich, but there's so much that we have, but there's so much that we don't have. There's so much that we're missing because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. But the vast majority of us aren't attuned enough, we're not plugged into Ribono Shel Olam enough to notice any other month of the year what's missing. But it's during these 3 weeks that every Jew, great and small alike, we're all more attuned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're all in a place of great reception, such that we can notice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't broadcasting to us quite as much as he was when there was the Beis HaMikdash. We'll notice that the tower, the Beis HaMikdash, is down. We're more attuned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a time, he writes ironically, of greater Kirvas Elokim, but of the sort that specifically that allows us to notice what's missing. We're more attuned, we're more in the zone. And the segula of these weeks that began today or perhaps yesterday is that we have the greater capacity to feel what we would have if we had a mikdash, and thereby to, in a meaningful way, mourn. Eliezer Ze'ira could do it in the middle of the month of Cheshvan, in the middle of the month of Shvat. But every Jew can be Eliezer Ze'ira during these weeks. Now, if that's the case, that means that we've just entered a period of extraordinary spiritual potential. Spiritual potential that saddens us because we notice what we're missing. But spiritual potential that could also potentially energize us both to be misabel, to embrace what it is that we're missing, to truly yearn for what we will have when we have a Beis HaMikdash, and to seek to grow in those ways, to notice the gaps that need to be filled, to figure out how we can begin to fill them in meaningful ways even before we have a Beis HaMikdash. Now this is all very nice, but what does this mean? What are we missing? You might turn around and say, I mean, the Beis HaMikdash is a place of the Bor Karbanos. So there are a list of mitzvahs that we haven't been able to fulfill. The mitzvah of the Karban Asha and the mitzvah of the Karban Chatas, okay. But it doesn't sound so dramatic. I know. We used to bring Karbanos. We haven't seen them. We haven't experienced them. It's hard to imagine. But, okay. It sounds like there's something far grander that we're missing. It's not just a handful of mitzvahs or bringing different types of sacrifices that we're missing. This description sounds like there's something more global. Something like my avos Hashem as a whole, my connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu as a whole. But why? But what? This image was a place of karbanos, wasn't it? So I'd like to do in the 20-25 minutes that we have ahead of us is to become, in our own senses, halachic raiders of the lost ark. I'm going to go on an adventure together to look for a missing aron or two. And through doing that, we may begin to tap into some of the larger, broader depth of what the Beis HaMikdash offered in the past, what we're missing presently, and what we look forward to, Mitzvah Hashem, in the future. So let's begin our journey at the very beginning. The Rambam dedicates out of his 14 Sefer compendium of all Halacha, Mishnah, Torah. Two out of the 14 books are about the Beis HaMikdash and Karbanos. The first one, Sefer Avodah, begins, logically, before he even gets to any Karbanos, he begins by laying the groundwork. Before he can bring Karbanos, we need to talk about the Beis HaMikdash. And he opening lines of Sefer Avodah. Here it is in front of you, source number 2. He begins with Hilchos Beis HaBechira, the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, opening chapter, opening halacha, parak aleph, halacha aleph, mitzvah saseh, lasos bayis lashem, a mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash, a home for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. It's a place for bringing karbanos. Muchan lios makrivin bo karbanos. V'chogegine lav shalosh ba'am bashan. It's set aside for bringing karbanos. That's what we expect to hear. And then already, we haven't really gotten to the key mystery yet, but already if our ears are perked, we'll notice the Rambam says two things. And just giving the thumbnail portrait, he'll have pages and pages about Beis HaMikdash. And pages and pages and pages of what you do in the Beis HaMikdash. But just the briefest of synopses, there's this thumbnail portrait. He said Beis HaMikdash is for Karbanos and Aliyah L'Regel. That's already interesting. If I would ask that, what's the Beis HaMikdash for? That's interesting. It's a place to bring Karbanos, and it's the destination of every Jew's pilgrimage, 3 times a year. Shalosh Regal. Already we're getting a sense it's more than just Karbanos, it's a place to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But let's continue. It says that's a pasuk in the Chumash, the Asuli Mikdash, the opening of Parshas Truma, that is the mitzvah of making a mikdash. The Rambam explains in the Sefer HaMitzvos, which he wrote as a preliminary to this Mishnah Torah, before he could bring together all of the material of the Torah Shebaal Peh, from the Bava and the Yerushalmi and the Midrashei Halacha and the Tosafta. He wanted to make sure as a first step, he worked out a list of what are all the 613 mitzvahs, which we have as the Sefer HaMitzvos. That way I'll make sure nothing gets left out. We'll have the skeleton, the structure of all of halachas, the 613 mitzvahs, and then we can elaborate in the Mishnah Torah. In the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he explains that although Parshas Truma has paragraph upon paragraph making this and making this wall and that wall and this building and that plea, they're all parts, all details in one mitzvah of Asur L'Mikdash, V'Shachanti V'Zochar. That is a single mitzvah. All the subsequent paragraphs of all the different parts of the Mishkan, those are parts, segments, details of the single mitzvah of Asur L'Mikdash. So it's not surprising that as the Rambam begins to unpack what a Beis HaMikdash is, we're going to hear all the parts. And so first he gives us some history. He goes through several halachas of history. You see, halacha Beis, halacha Gimel, here you have halacha Dalet. He tells you if you want to know some more about what the Beis HaMikdash looked like, You could look in Sefer Melachim here about the first Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaShlishi, the one that will be built, we hope soon. We know in the future, and we hope soon in the future. That's described at great length near the end of Sefer Yechezkel. And then he says they use that as a rough framework for the Beis Sheni as well. Okay, so you can find different Beis HaMikdash throughout Tanakh. Lots of details. There were differences in terms of how high and how big. Every mikdash varied in details from one to the next. But then he turns our attention back in halachas hey and vav. So, but there are certain immutables. There are certain things. Maybe this was a little longer, this was a little higher. Maybe have this material, that material. But there are certain basics. Any mikdash needs to have the following basics. The Elohein, turning the page, hadivar m'shein ikr v'binyan habayis. It says first in terms of the structure, to build a Beis HaMikdash, to build a house. So you're building a house with several rooms. And he explains, there's a Kodesh HaKadosh in the back that we know as a place of the Aron. Then in front there's one or two more rooms. But there was the menorah, the so on and so forth, different rooms. And then there's an open air area around it, surrounded by a wall. That was called, in the Mishkan, called the Chatzer. In the Beis HaMikdash, called the Azara. And that's in the open air area that's surrounded the building of the Beis HaMikdash, that open air area, the Chatzer, the Azara, that's where most of the Avodas HaKarbanos took place. Most of what you learn about in Seder Kachim is taking place in the Chatzer, in the Azara. Okay, so Halacha Hey is giving me the basics of what any Mikdash has to look like in terms of structure. You have to have a series of rooms connected together. In the back, the last room is Kodesh HaKadoshim, surrounded by an open air area, surrounded by a wall. And then he says, that's not all. The mitzvah is not only to build walls, to build floors, to build ceilings, to build a building. You also, that's one half of the Mishkan, but halacha vav, osin ba mikdash shiva kelim. You also needed to, the mikdash was not only walls, but also the klei hamikdash. And he goes on to list, this mizbeach, and that mizbeach, and the ramp mizbeach. In the Frankel Rambam, they restored some of the old girsas, some of the more correct terminology of the Rambam, so they have the word Shiva. Also, Mikdash, Shiva, Kalim. The Rambam writes in the Geras Chiyas HaMason, the letter he wrote to reinforce his assertion that Chiyas HaMason is one of the 13 Animamans. So he writes that when he listed the Animamans in his parish on Sanhedrin, he made sure to give a number at the beginning. He didn't just list different beliefs. It's 13. In Paragimo, Hilchas Tshuva, he lists also a list of emuna issues and other emuna related issues. It gives you a number at the beginning. Why, he says? Because I want to make sure that no scribe will accidentally leave one out. This way, if you know there's a number, I could check. There were seven, and then some left one out. You'll realize, oh, there are only six items. There must be something missing. That's why I give a number, the Rambam writes, and that way you make sure nothing gets lost from the list in the copy. So in the Frankel Rambam, they have the word Shiva. Also, Mikdash, Shiva. The Rambam wants us to be sure they have all seven items. So let's look at his list. Take a look inside. What are the seven key pieces of furniture in the Beis HaMikdash? The seven kalim. There were many, hundreds of kalim, but these seven are critical in order to have a Beis HaMikdash. Mizbeach li'ola and the kevesh. So in the outside area, you have the large mizbeach used for karbanos, and the ramp leads up to it. That's two. And then he says, going to the next line, nearby, also outside, kior v'kana. You have essentially the sink, the jerry can, the holy jerry can, which the common used to wash their hands, and it had a base they would sit on. Okay, so far up to how many? Four. So how many do you have left? Three left. Then going down to the last line, he says, if you walk into the building, into the Heichal, into the Kodesh, then you see another three kalim. Mizbeach, small mizbeach for Ketores, the menorah, and the shulchan for Lachan Panim. And there's your Beis HaMikdash in a nutshell. The rest of Parak Aleph, the Rambam spends on the details of the building, the structure, expanding on Halacha Hey, and the following two prakim, Parak Beis and Parak Gimel, are spent on the details of making these kalim. Now, it's not that there's anything that he said that's troubling, but it's what he didn't say. It's the hashmata that's really strange. What's missing from his list? The ark. Right? Here's our first lost ark. It's lost in the Rambam. He's telling you how to make a mishkan. You open the psukim. He's expanding on the psukim parashas Truma. Vasili Mikdash. He just quoted it. You open the parashas Chumash. Fossil Mikdash, in paragraph after paragraph after paragraph, all different parts. What's the first one? The Aron, which is nowhere to be found. The Rambam's description, how you make a Mishkan. That's pretty strange. Where'd it go? Okay, lost. Lost in the pages of the Rambam? It didn't get lost by scribal error, because he tells us seven. It's not eight. It's not that it got left out. What happened to the Aron? Strange. Very, very strange. What are we supposed to make of that? So this is a second lost Aron. If in Perek Aleph, we didn't hear enough about the Aron, as a matter of fact, in the first three Prakim, we heard nothing about the Aron. In the Prakim Beis Megillah, he never tells us how to make an Aron. Well, in Perek Dalet, we hear too much about the Aron. Because after the first three chapters of Beis HaBechira, where he talks about the mitzvah, the commandment to make a Mishkan, how do you do it? Jews are ready to make a mikdash. What do you need to build? How do you do it? The detailed implementation of that mitzvah, Prakim, the first three chapters. In the fourth chapter, he begins a different trail. In the fourth chapter, he begins to talk about when you have a mikdash, what are the different levels of sanctity? What's the thing like? What's the essence of the mikdash? And here he begins over the next three chapters, 4, 5, and 6, Prakim Dalet Hein Vav, to step down the different levels of kedusha, starting from the top, starting from the highest level in the center, and slowly describing each layer, each level of kedusha of the mikdash. And he begins, and we're going to take a look where he begins in the center. Perek Dalet begins very dramatically. He tells us, Evan Hoysa, here is source number 3. Perek Dalet Hilchos Beis HaBechira Halacha Aleph. Evan Hoysa Bekosh HaKadosh B'Ma'aravo. If you were to walk, Kongol walks in to the Kosh HaKadosh on Yom Kippur, dressed, prepared, and what does he see? On the western side, in the back of the Kosh HaKadosh, there's a stone coming out of the floor. She'aleha Hayah Aron Munach. And the Aron was placed upon that stone. Ram goes on to describe the several other items that were there. There's a little bit of mun. There was Aaron's stick. This was the official holy, as it were, if you could use this terminology, the halachic museum of Klal Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, these items have to remain forever. You have a little bit of mun to remember the mitzvah of the mun. Aaron's staff to remember that nace we read about not long ago. But here's the problem. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol never saw an Aron. How come? The Rambam tells us. Let me tell you what happened. That's what used to be. But Be'eshabana Shlomo's Habayis, when Shlomo Mel built the first Beis HaMikdash, the Yodasha Sofalei Charein, but he knew B'Nevu, he knew prophetically that this Beis HaMikdash was the first, but it would not be the last. And it would not last forever. It's here now, it's going to stand for centuries, but eventually be destroyed. Yodasha Sofalei Charein. So he had the foresight, he was the wisest of all men, so he said, we need to prepare now for what's going to happen in centuries from now. Sooner or later, some marauding nation is going to ransack the Beis HaMikdash. The Aron needs to be protected. I can't protect everything, but I can protect the Aron. I can protect that which is most dear. Bana bo makom lignoz bo ha'aron, he built a place to hide the Aron away. Where? Lamata. Deep in the ground, mematmonios amukos valkalkalos, in deep subterranean labyrinths, deep in a chamber and a sub-cellar, there was a lot going on below the ground. There was an underground chamber where the Aron could be hid. That's what Shlomo HaMelech had done when he built the Beis HaMikdash. And then, a couple centuries later, his great-great-great-great-grandson, Yoshiyahu, who's the last real king of the Jewish people, which I mean last sovereign king, Yoshio's children, grandchildren were kings after him, but they were all puppets of one empire or another, of Ashur, of Bavel, Mitzrayim. The last real sovereign king of the Bais Rishon was Yoshio. And he understood that things were teetering. Yoshio HaMelech Tziva VeGanzu B'Makam Shebana Shlomo. And he had them put the Aron. They said, now it's time. My great-great-grandfather had put this plan into place centuries ago. Now it's time for Plan B. It's time for the Aron to move into the basement, Kotz HaPasuk, that Yoshio tells Levim, seems to have told Levim to do this, Ivdu es Hashem Elokeichem. It's time to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a rare, unusual, and sad way. It's time for us to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu by putting the Aron down to the basement. Because that's where it'll be, we're not going to be able to see it, but that will be safe. Fascinating. Very pretty Rambam, very beautiful. Very beautiful. You'll notice in the title of this, the name of this makor, there's one word that's underlined though. It's the Rambam Hilchos, Beis Abichir. The Rambam Sefer is a Sefer of Halachas, a Sefer of law. Sometimes, occasionally, usually it's halacha, law about behavioral expectations of a Jew, what I should do, what I should not do. Sometimes it's internal. Sometimes it's chovas halavavos, what a Jew is expected to, how a Jew is expected to feel, expectations about thought, about attitude, about personality. But Rambam Sefer is a Sefer of halacha. It's a Sefer of a guidebook. It's not generally a Sefer of history. Every once in a while, the Rambam will get into history a bit, but it's surprising that the Rambam needs to give me the background. You know what's even more surprising? Take a look, please, at the final source. The Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara says, this business about the Aron disappearing, it's reported already in the Mishnah. Mishnah says that Yuma describes, Masechus Yuma mostly describes the service of the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. It takes you step by step by step, tells you the story of the Kohen Gadol from Tzom Gedalia all the way to the end of Yom Kippur. The whole process, the whole procedure. At one point he gets up to the Kohen Gadol, walks into the Mikdash. And Daphne Yom Gimel, the Mishnah says, and by the way, in the olden days, in the first Beis HaMikdash, you walk in, there's the Aron. Mishanita Aron, Mishnah says, once Aron was taken away, Evan Haisa Sham Yos Devim Risham. There was a stone that was there, and they had the stone without the Aron. So in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol would walk in. He couldn't sprinkle the blood towards the Aron. It would just be towards the stone because it was just an empty stone. Mishnah tells me the Aron disappeared. Doesn't really tell me, though, what happened to it. That's the obvious mystery. And then the Gemara says there is a little bit of a hint. Mishanignaz lo katan, Mishanita. The Mishnah didn't say when the Aron was hidden, because the Aron was taken. It sounds like it was captured. Ah! The Gemara says, that's right, because in fact there's a machlokes hatanoim, what happened to the Aron? Where should a raider of the lost ark be raiding? Where should you look? So as a matter of fact, the Tana Rabbi Eliezer and the Tana Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, they say, based on their reading of Psukim and Malachim and Yeshayahu, that the Aron was never hidden away, and when Nebuchadnezzar captured the first base of Mikdash, he took it away as part of the loot. It was taken to Bo, taken to Iraq, and there it is at Yom Hazeh, somewhere in some museum in Iraq. That's the position of several Tanan. Aron Gaol Abadah went to Gaul to the Jewish people. And that's the indication of the Mishnah. But there is a Tana who says, Rabbi Yehuda, Aron bin Mekomo Nignes. And no, it was put away in the ground as the Rambam describes. And here's the question. Why is the Rambam describing this? Well, it's a historical machlokas. Either the Aron was put in the ground or the Aron was taken away to Babel. One or the other. We can debate reading the Psukim what the Psukim seems to be describing, but it's not a halachic machlokas, it's a historical machlokas. How is there a Haskin a historical machlokas? Either it's here or it's there. But why is the Rambam getting involved in history to begin with in a halachic work? And all the more so, why is he getting involved in a historical machlokas? Why? It doesn't seem to belong in this sefer. So there are two acharonim, very different acharonim, who address this problem and give remarkably identical answers. Rabbi Yaakov Emden in his parish on Beis HaBechira, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, printed back the Franklin Rambam, and Shechter and Sefer quotes from the Rav, from Soloveitchik, the same approach. That apparently, if it appears in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, and the Rambam is posking this machlokas, it must be that this is not merely a historical issue. This must be a halachic machlokas. Where's the halacha? Either the Aron is here or the Aron is there. So apparently, the statement that the Aron got lost underground and not taken to Iraq, that's not merely of historical interest. Apparently, that's a halachic statement. Apparently, that says that not just it happens to be that it is underground, but it needed to be underground in order for us to have a mikdash. Without a mikdash, without Ara, without luchos and Ara in the ground, there would be no mikdash at all. The place would have lost its kedusha. It's not just a question of
history, where did the Aron end up? If I want to search for the Ark, where should I look? It's nothing much, much more than that. It's, can the Kedusha of Har HaBayis survive without having Luchos on location? And we Paskin, says Rambam, no. We Paskin, the Makom HaMikdash is Kadosh today because you can't see them, but they're still there. The Aron isn't really lost. It just moved down a couple of stories. But it's still in that mountain. Not visible, but it's down below. And that's the source of the Kedusha of Mikdash. That's a remarkable idea. That the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash was driven by the Torah that it contained. By the Luchos that it contained. That may explain as well the other lost ark. The lost ark in the text of the Rambam. We had wondered, the Rambam has given me the thumbnail portrait of how you build the Beis HaMikdash in a few easy steps. Here are the key ingredients, and what seems like the first ingredient in Chumash, the Aron, never appeared in Perek Aleph. When he talks about the Kedusha of the Mikdash in the fourth Perek, it's front and center. When he talks about how to make it Mikdash, it's gone. The answer, perhaps, is because that making Aron is not part of making a Mikdash. Making Aron is a preliminary step. That's not part of making a Mikdash. That's how you lay the groundwork. First, we need Luchos to endow this area with Kedusha. Well, if we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah represented through the presence of Luchos, now this is holy ground. Once this is holy ground, now we can begin to talk about the mitzvah of building a Mikdash on holy ground. In halakhic terminology, we would say the Aron is not a part of the mitzvah. Making the Aron, or having Luchos is not a part of the mitzvah. It's a hechsher mitzvah. That's the preliminary step. I need to tie tzitzis before I can wear them. I need to build a sukkah before I can live in it. But the Rambam tells us quite explicitly in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, I don't count Hechsher Mitzvah as a mitzvah. That's the preliminary step. The mitzvah is, now that everything is set and ready to go, now what do I do? So ironically, the Aron is so important that it doesn't get mentioned here. Because it's the step before. I need the Aron to lay the groundwork to make this holy space holy ground so I can even build a mikdash. But now let's summarize our adventures with the two lost arks. Let's bring it back home to Eliezer Klein's black shoes. We saw two lost arks. Describing the mitzvah, the Rambam didn't mention making an Aron. In describing the Kedusha of Mikdash, three chapters later, he has a lot to say about the Aron. It used to be there, and then it went downstairs. He takes a stand on what seems to be a historical debate between the Tanakh. So both the Rav and Yaakov Enden suggest that the Aron is actually the presence of the Aron. The Rambam is paskining. Aron needed to be on location because the Kedusha of Mikdash is tied to the presence of the Luchos there. The Rav developed at greater length, and Rav Shechter develops this at length in the 12th chapter of Eretz Tzvi. That's a common theme. Throughout many types of Kedusha and Halacha, the Torah tends to be the conduit of Kedusha. Torah tends to be the generator. So many Kedushas are rooted in the presence of Torah. Most dramatically, perhaps, in Beis HaMikdash. Because Torah is the conduit, Kadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately the source of Kedusha, and Torah is a primary avenue for us to connect to that in Olam Hazeh. And so, it's the step before you make a Mikdash is creating holy space. But Torah was the center, the Mikdash then became a place of Kedusha because it was the center of Torah. And now we begin to appreciate Eliezer's Zeira and the black shoes. Because Chaim Friedlander told us that not every Jew is Eliezer's Zeira. Not every Jew can plug into what the Mikdash offers us, would have offered us and will offer us, and right now isn't offering us because we have no Mikdash. Not every Jew can notice that all year round. But every Jew can notice it now. Because the Mikdash is so much more than just a place of karbanos. He began to journey through the Rambam by noticing the Mikdash is a place of aliyah l'regel. The Mikdash is a place where a Jew comes to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the Mikdash is a place of where it's easiest on this planet to plug into Ribono Shel Olam. And that's why so many different types of mitzvahs were headquartered in the Beis HaMikdash. The Luchos were there. The official Sifrei Torah were there. The Sanhedrin representing Torah Shel Peh, right near the Mizbeach. The Chazal described the Beis HaMikdash was the center of Chesed. There were special areas set aside for Chesed. Every Jew, from the inception, the opening tefillah of Shlomo, the inauguration of Beis HaMikdash, every Jew for the last couple of thousand years, you daven facing the Mikdash or where the Mikdash ought to be. Because it's that Kedusha that the presence of Aron creates. That's the this power center for our connectedness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if I think about things that are hard, and I think about my life, and I think about, you know, some nisyonos are easier, some nisyonos are harder. There are certain temptations where, you know, sometimes I know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects this of me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects me to act in a certain way that enables me to power through. But sometimes I feel farther. I don't feel so connected. And there are some nisyonos that are more difficult. There'll be times in my life when life is working well. There'll be times in my life when I get to rockier points and I feel more distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shlomo Melech describes in the Shir HaShirim, this boy and daughter who are in love, but the relationship comes and goes. And typically the girl representing us is yearning for her boyfriend, yearning for the dod, yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there comes those times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes knocking, and we're too tired to get out of bed. We're too lazy to get on our slippers and get on our bathrobe on top of our pajamas to go answer the door. There are those times when we don't feel so connected. That's exactly what Eliezer Zeira could tune into every day of the year. And what we can begin to notice in the next 3 weeks, those times would be easier with the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, powered by the Luchos, inscribed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was a place of such incredible access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every Jew has access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's pieces of our access that are missing. The tower isn't there. The tower is underground. And it's not transmitting the message, the signal, the divine signal to us quite as loud as it once was. And as we hope that it will be, we can use the opportunity of the next 3 weeks to think about ourselves. Look in the mirror and ask, when do I feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When do I feel farther? How can I begin to plan, without a Beis HaMikdash, strategies to help me draw close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even now, and how much I yearn for all of those struggles to be so much easier when the tower will rise from the ground, transmitting once again with the Bayis HaShlishi, incredible kibbutz el kim, incredible acts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. May we see it very soon. Thank you so much.